Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Ravenpuff Common Room, and on Instagram at the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/therambling ravenpuffs, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in. Grab your butterbeer and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Ravenpuffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're discussing Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Chapter 11, The Firebolt, and Chapter 12, The Patronus. In these chapters, Harry receives a mysterious Christmas present, and we learn just how despicable Dementors truly are.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Yeah.
So what were your thoughts on these chapters?
I think that the Firebolt chapter played out. I admired the scrutiny that took place of the gift. I think that was respectful. And then the Patronus chapter, if, you know, memory serves me right, we get the kind of charm for it, but we don't know what Harry's Patronus is yet. So
no, we do not.
I do know what mine is. So... I took the quiz.
Oh, you officially took the quiz. So, yes. we'll save it for when we get to that chapter.
Okay.
But first off, it is the Firebolt. Harry didn't even have a very clear idea of how he managed to get back into the Honey Duke's cellar through the tunnel and into the castle once more. All he knew was that the return trip seemed to take no time at all, and that he hardly noticed what he was doing because his head was still pounding with the conversation he had just heard. Have you ever been like that, where you've been like traveling and you just don't remember walking or driving or doing anything?
It's almost every day for me. My memory seems to be declining as I get older. This kind of reminds me of being on vacation and you wake up and you're like, oh yeah, I'm in a different place. Or you come home from vacation and you're like, oh yeah, I'm home. Don't know how that all happened, but do you have an instance in particular that made you ask that question?
Yeah. Well, in just terms of memory, like I rely so much now on audiobooks and podcasts to entertain myself while I'm driving.
Okay.
And I just have the active imagination where I'm just seeing the, you know, book, novel as a film in my head. And it's like, oh, how did I even... I am already parked.
I can relate to that. I also, you know, grew up in expansive, you know, bits of land where I would drive somewhere and it was just nothing forever and ever. And then eventually you're like, oh, I'm here now. How did that happen? So I think that's the gift of an imagination and the joy of reading, I guess I would say.
Indeed. So, yeah, again, I think the adults were really, really dumb. This was like what I hate the whole cliche. Like, it's not so much cliche like in literature, like it happens in real life. The fact is something is painful to someone and so you don't want to tell them, but when they finally find out, it's 10 times worse because they found out in a really bad way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you're kind of like trying to protect them from the information, but then you're really doing more harm than good. It's a fine line to kind of walk and know what the right decision is of, you know, telling somebody that information. But
yeah, and I think with Harry in this case, again, we've got Harry who goes to school with children of people who like lived this, you know, war with Voldemort and the whole Sirius Black betrayal thing. So again, you know, with Harry saying everything, it was gonna come out. And so...
Absolutely. I guess it's just a good thing it came out now rather than, you know, two books ago, 2 years before, when he was younger. Not that this is anything that, you know, is easy to hear for anybody, but I think the interesting thing that you've made me realize is nobody really has ever sat Harry down and said, so here's the story, and kind of given him the full details. And obviously there isn't an intention, but they're having this conversation behind his back, which he then obviously hears and is kind of like, oh, that was a lot of very heavy information when you're not, you know, he wasn't fully prepared to hear it. I know that I've read some advice that, you know, sometimes it's best to say, do you have space for this conversation before you start, you know, telling somebody about something? And Harry definitely didn't get asked that question. He just kind of got unloaded with his devastating life story.
Mm-hmm. So in light of this, he goes into his dormitory and he pulls out the photo album that Hagrid gave him at the end of the first year, you know, with pictures of his parents and their friends. And he finally recognizes Sirius Black as the best man at his parents' wedding, who, of course, looks nothing like his like mugshot because he's a young, youthful, handsome man. And Harry's like, if he wasn't looking for it, he never would have even considered that this could be the same person.
Yeah, which I guess is a testament to how deranged Voldemort makes somebody, or how bad it is in Azkaban, how much of his soul is sucked out or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And so Harry, let's see, what do we got? Well, he's just contemplating like the Dementors don't affect him. It's not a punishment for him. And so he basically goes to bed feeling dejected and forlorn, naturally so. And then he wakes up and comes down, and it's the first day of the Christmas holidays. So almost everyone is gone except like Ron, Hermione. And is anyone else there of the family? Or
I was going to say Ron, Hermione. I thought Neville, but I know that's not right. So I know that they have dinner with the professors, but I forgot Malfoy's not there, I don't think. I'm mm-hmm. just trying to refresh my memory.
So what do you think of Ron and Hermione's little rehearsed pep talk?
I think Ron and Hermione are good friends. And but yeah, they're again reminding him, don't go after Sirius Black. Like I feel like that, as far as the story and foreshadowing goes, is like, okay, we've had enough of people telling him, like, don't do this, don't do this, that you know he's going to do it. It's almost like, don't think about a pink elephant. And then, of course, you're going to start thinking about a pink elephant. But they're trying their best. That's what I think about that.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's just, I think, you know, again, everyone's saying don't go after Black. And I'm, you know, it's only Harry's third year. And yes, he's gotten into some scraps, shall we say. But I, you know, genuinely, at least at this point, I don't see him as the type to go out and do something like really, really stupid. Like, I guess, again, going after the Philosopher's Stone was really, really stupid. I don't know. Maybe I'm underestimating Harry's propensity towards foolish bravery.
I think that maybe we could think that, or I mean, at least I would think he would, maybe foolish bravery is a great way to put it. But maybe he would have the desire to at least be a little more prepared this go around. Like, it seems like based on the next chapter, he's seeking help to better understand certain things and maybe finesse his abilities before he goes after Black. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, I guess should I be saying is Harry has gotten himself, in serious trouble, but it's always been for a noble purpose. And I guess I'm sort of separating, this is a revenge thing. This isn't a noble purpose, if you will, like getting the Philosopher's Stone to make sure someone evil doesn't get it. That was like, again, you know, I'm doing it, I'm involving myself, but still it's kind of, you know, set apart from me. And likewise with the Chamber of Secrets, you know, I guess I'm just surprised that people are immediately presuming that he's going to go the revenge mode, which I think may, again, he's naturally having these feelings, which of course isn't natural, but feelings and actions are different. And I think people aren't being totally, both the kids and the adults aren't being totally fair to him.
Okay. I understand where you're coming from now. You're thinking that like the bravery with good intention. Yeah. He's proved time and time again that he's going to do that, but this is just all out revenge. And everybody seems to be very concerned that he's just going to go take revenge. I think I remember Malfoy.
Excuse me.
You're all right. Malfoy in an earlier chapter being like, I mean, I'd go after him if he did what I know he did. And at the time, Harry didn't know, but Malfoy planted that seed. If we were talking about Malfoy, it would be like, well, of course this kid's going to go after him because there is a little bit of, I mean, Malfoy's taking revenge out on, you know, Hagrid trying to get him fired and whatnot. But I see your point and and I don't know. I don't think Harry's a little like testy, I would say sometimes, but I haven't seen him go full bore on taking his revenge on somebody.
Yeah, I think at this stage, it would be more like the danger is more so not that Harry would go out looking for him, but that again, you know, Sirius Black has already broken into the castle once. It would just be more if Harry had stumbled upon Sirius Black, and then what would he do? Like, he wouldn't seek it out, but if the situation prevented himself and he, you know, by happenstance, by serendipity, then maybe he'd do something.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, you know, he quotes Malfoy and they're like, you're going to take Malfoy's advice instead of ours, said Ron furiously.
Come on, Harry, let's be a Gryffindor in this situation. Let's not be a Slytherin.
Listen, you know what Pettigrew's mother got back after Black had finished with him? Dad told me the Order of Merlin first class and Pettigrew's finger in a box. That was the biggest bit of him they could find. Black's a madman, Harry, and he's dangerous.
Harry uses the, Malfoy's dad must have told him he's right in Voldemort's inner circle, which Ron wigs out about. I thought that was kind of funny because I'm like, you've been friends with Harry Potter this long and he's dropping the Voldemort name and you're still like, please don't say that. Like, y'all, come on, chill. I think earlier in the chapter, they talk about how Peter Pettigrew was kind of like, reminded them a little bit of Neville Longbottom. And I thought that was kind of sad. So,
yeah. And so they try to distract Harry. It's like, you know, why don't we go see Hagrid? And he's like, yeah, let's go see that mofo. Why didn't he tell me any of this crap?
Right, yeah. And then they also have the, you know, Christmas. So they want to celebrate Christmas too. And they get to Hagrid's place and Hagrid is not very happy.
Yeah, to the point, Harry cannot bring himself to confront Hagrid because Hagrid is already so inconsolable because Buckbeak is going to be tried.
Yes, I can read. However, Hagrid, Harry's reading this document that Hagrid has. However, we must register our concern about the hippogriff in question. We have decided to uphold the official complaint of Mr. Lucius Malfoy, and this matter will be taken to the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures. The hearing will take place on April 20th, and we ask you to present yourself and your hippogriff at the committee's offices in London on that date. In the meantime, the hippogriff should be tethered and isolated. Yours in fellowship.
So I'm just thinking that last book, Lucius Malfoy was removed from the Board of School Governors in disgrace. How does he still have this sort of power?
He must have like the right people in his pocket, I guess.
Or just a lot on. Well, again, I guess in this case, it's not so much bamboozling the Board of Governors. It's more, again, his connections now in the ministry because he still has a shit ton of money.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's the only way. I mean, obviously, this is a big accusation. And I was thinking about the relationship between magical creatures and witches and wizards. So you're taking a life here and at the behest of Lucius Malfoy, who still is throwing his weight around. I don't know.
This brings me the whole, you know, the Buckbeak incident and this, you know, the fact that he's going to be tried. And so basically they admit that Hagrid himself is not at fault, but still want to execute or do something to Buckbeak. You know, the way that if a dog attacks someone, like, you know, in old school laws, you had the right to, like, shoot the dog or, like, kill the dog if it caused damage to, like, you or your family member or something, you know?
Right, right.
And I'm just thinking, okay, even if you want to claim that, yes, this beast is, you know, you take him to a sanctuary, you say, okay, he can never be used for, like, classrooms. He just needs to go off into the wilderness and be a hippogriff and live happily ever after. Like, killing him doesn't fix the fact that Draco got slashed.
Right, exactly. And this reminds me of Professor Snape and the frog situation where he's like, I'm going to kill this frog. It's like, you're taking out the aggression on the wrong thing. Not that Snape's aggression was justified toward Neville anyway, but I like magical creatures. I would never be able to be part of the committee for the disposal of dangerous creatures. The thing is, Malfoy probably left out the part where he provoked the hippogriff and didn't follow instructions. So this is not justified.
Yeah. And then, of course, I think in the actual chapter, Talons and Tea Leaves, when Buckbeak slashes Draco, there's the whole ethical, like, pedagogical question of, yes, Draco didn't listen, but at the same time, Draco is a 13-year-old kid, and how much of a margin of error can you allow, knowing that probably 13-year-olds aren't going to always do what you say?
Right. Yeah,
we went into that whole spiel, but yeah. Ultimately, Hagrid is in the clearing, Buckbeak is not. And I just found it funny that how did they miss the fact that a horse-sized bird was in Hagrid's cabin? Because they didn't notice at first.
I don't know. He had to be, I guess, well hidden. I don't know. Did Hagrid have like a tarp over him or something?
I don't know. Again, as someone who just, you know, was around horses for so long, and I'm just like, how do you hide a horse? You don't.
Yeah. He didn't, like, borrow Harry's invisibility cloak or anything, so.
And then actually, so it goes actually into a little deeper where Hagrid was saying, you know, I would have half a mind just to release Buckbeak, but they'd know I did it, and I'm scared of going back to Azkaban. And he gets, you know, does a little jog down memory lane about his time that he was wrongfully imprisoned in Azkaban.
Right, right.
And, you know, I think Hermione's like, but you were innocent. And Hagrid's response, where is it?
Think that matters to them? They don't care. Long as they've got a couple of hundred humans stuck there with them so they can leech all the happiness out of them. They don't give a damn who's guilty and who's not.
And my notes in that I wrote a week or so ago was, Dementors are like the justice system. No one cares what's right or wrong.
As long as they just have some grist for the mill. Yeah, that's pretty... That feels like applicable to a lot of things, it seems like. Sucking the life of... I called something a dementor today, like a it's a dementor. So there you go, Amy. I'm using some Harry Potter lingo in my everyday life.
Yay, good.
Finally.
Yeah. I guess I'm getting older. There have been a few instances where I was happy with how the police responded and things like that. But there are a lot of things that's happened in my life where it's just like, what is the term? No blood, no foul, which is like, you know, the police and again, the government, you know, just the sense of justice as we know it. Abstract and institutional. This notion of justice, all it does for society to make, all it does is prevent complete anarchy or like, again, if, you know, someone's like physically assaulting you. If like, I've kind of come to accept that if you're the victim of a nonviolent crime, forget it. No one's going to do anything.
Yeah, pretty much. I think you have to be the like, I don't know. You have to be in a certain stature or certain status, like Lucius Malfoy, and to get something like that done. But that's pretty much the extent of it. Otherwise, it's kind of like, oh, well, too bad. Sorry. You and the insurance can figure that out. It's like, thanks.
Mm-hmm. And so they do some research in the library, you know, trying to help Hagrid out. But that doesn't seem to go over too well. It's like, oh, here's something. There was a case in 1722, but the Hippogriff was convicted. Ugh, look what they did to it. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of reminds me of, what is it? Pitbulls. Pitbulls get such a bad rep for being, like, really vicious and stuff.
Right. Yeah, they do.
It's almost as if, like, Hippogriffs are this kind of, like, quasi, again, for, like, compared to dragons and other magical creatures, not all that big, but still have this stereotype of ferocity.
Yeah. They also, this also reminds just me on the, you know, execution things and how animals have been used in execution in the past. But this was executing animals, which is not something I really want to get into, to be quite honest. But it's not pleasant. And I think pit bulls are a great example. And I know a lot of there's a lot of controversy around pit bulls, but ultimately,
there are even like certain counties that like won't let you have a pit bull.
Yeah, I think they're super sorry. I think there are neighborhoods that do the same thing. So
yeah, again, it's really sad. Like I wish I thought they were attractive. Because, you know, that's just not the type of dog that I, you know, typically go for in terms of the very square jawline and stuff. Like if I thought they were pretty, like I would probably want to adopt them because literally that's like 50% of what's in the animal shelters.
Right, or some sort of like descendant of a pit bull, some sort of breeding. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just a cat person, so.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm in a condo. I don't have enough room for what my husband is hoping, you know, in our future home to get his giant Saint Bernard. My God.
Aw, I love Saint Bernards. They're cool dogs. They're huge. They're cool.
Yeah. So, Christmas morning.
I'm glad we got to experience a Christmas morning here. I know I feel like there's always been some sort of distraction around there, but maybe this is just a moment.
So, yeah, comparatively, this Christmas was not as intense like first Christmas at Hogwarts, Mirror of Erised.
Right, yes.
The second year's Christmas, Polyjuice Potion.
Yes. And this one, the threat is definitely darker, but I feel like we do actually get to, you know, there is some conversation that happens and we do kind of have the dinner with the people there, which is a lot of professors are there for the holiday, lot of the key players.
But before they go down, you know, Harry's going through his presents and he's just got a handful. Like Mrs. Weasley had sent him a scarlet sweater with the Gryffindor lion knitted on the front. Also a dozen home-baked mince pies, some Christmas cakes, and a box of nut brittle. As he moved through the things, he saw a long, thin package lying underneath. And I'm just thinking, how does the Christmas present delivery service work? That's never explained.
Oh, okay. I just assumed it was owls. For some reason, I like without any sort of information, I was just like, the owls probably just like drop that off and they're real quiet about it. That was my assumption. But
honestly, that is as good as a theory as any other at this point. And what does he get?
I didn't think I suspected he would get a firebolt, but I suspected he'd get a new broom because of the incident earlier.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's hard to explain, like, again, a broom is not as big or as bulky as, like a car, but again, socially, it's a big chunk of how people transport themselves in the wizarding world if they don't want to apparate, like, or teleport. So it's, in many ways, like, even though, you know, it's basically getting a Lamborghini or a Ferrari.
Wow. Okay. I guess I didn't even think about it being used as transportation in the wizarding world, but I just thought about it with Quidditch. But okay, so he's so obviously, given what you just said, there's some kind of question that comes with this gift because there's no like little card or no weird cryptic message. It's just
Like, even Dumbledore gave him a cryptic message when he got the invisibility cloak.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking about. But this, it was just like a present, which I don't, I guess maybe I'm just so paranoid. I probably would be like, oh, I don't know who this is. I'm not going to open it. Or did anybody here like forget to label something? And I think Hermione kind of has the same reaction I would. But
yeah. Well, it's like, again, if I went into the parking lot of my condo complex and saw a Lamborghini with a big bow, I'm partially going to think, you know, are the brakes tampered with?
Right, right. You're going to, unless like your husband comes out and is like, happy Christmas or whatever. I don't know if that's
or in my talks. In my case, I'm going to think that it's a ploy by the cyber army of the Iran's Revolutionary Guard who keep sending my husband fake friend requests after he gives his interviews because they don't like that he speaks out in the opposition.
Well, sounds like I think in all these situations, it would be like you would look at that vehicle and go, now wait a minute. And I think it just feels a little typical that Hermione's like, now let's have this inspected. And I think it's interesting because McGonagall is like, of course she wants Harry to have this broom, but she's also like, yeah, this is weird. Let's have it inspected. And then Ron and Harry are pissed because they have this sweet new toy that they can't play with.
Yeah, very sad. Yeah, that got me really thinking about, again, what my husband has been dealing with his interviews, because, of course, he speaks out in opposition and criticizes the government, which is the Islamic Republic of Iran. And we already knew he was on the blacklist of the Revolutionary Guard because we've seen some of their social media criticize him and try and twist his words and everything. But like, he's getting more and more friend requests from, again, accounts that are obviously fake. And one of them even had my maiden name. So they're doing their homework. So I'm sure they know everything about me, my family, everything like that. And then the funniest one was that, again, they try to lure me, my husband, in by having these profiles of women, of like white women. And it was so funny, like, because they, like, the fake name was called Jennifer Chosworth. Like, okay. And it was spelled in English, and it seems, like, kind of normal. But that word in, like, that Chosworth or whatever, that word in Persian means pussy.
Oh, that's, like, that seems a little obvious, like, that.
Yeah, they believe their own stereotypes that Iranians and Persians who live in the West are like morally decadent and are like sex obsessed, and that's why they go to the West to lead these absolutely crazy orgy lives, and you know can't and don't want to deal with the fact that educated political philosophers like my husband are speaking out in opposition.
Right. Oh my goodness.
So that was the funniest one. But what was kind of creepy about that was the fake picture that they put with it was a woman with a microphone. So they know that I podcast.
Oh, wow. That's
so weird. I would imagine that they may possibly be our most ardent listeners. And so Cyber Army, if you're listening to this, fuck you.
And leave me alone, please. I don't know what's going on, and I'm fine with that. I just want to talk about Harry Potter, probably like a lot of our listeners. So.
And I just want to talk about Harry Potter too. You have to be really dedicated if you're combing through this level of nerdy geekdom to get any dirt on my husband.
Yes, yes. Interesting.
Anyway, I digress. But yeah. So we have dinner. Or Christmas lunch / dinner. Did you have Christmas lunch or Christmas dinner, like the big meal, and your family?
We're a little strange, and Christmas Eve was kind of our thing, where we would, you know, we would just kind of do whatever. I think my brother liked to have cocktail shrimp, but yeah, we didn't. You know, we grew up where I grew up most of my life. We're away from a lot of extended family, so it was just like the four of us. So we probably kept a little modest, but how about y'all? Do you have some Our tradition was a little, I guess, movie popcorn. We'd always go to the movies, but
We would always have, in my birth family, we would always, the big meal would be Christmas lunch because we couldn't wait to till dinner. Oh. And, you know, my adult with my husband, you know, we have, you know, technically I'm not Christian anymore. So the thing I care about is winter solstice. But winter solstice is also celebrated in Persian culture and it's known as Shab-e Yalda, the night the sun was born. And so there's a whole get up and like sort of table with specific decorations of like nuts and candies and like red things like apples and pomegranates to represent the sun and things and very specific dishes like the Tabrizi meatballs. So winter solstice is always, you know, the Persian cooking. And then on like Christmas, I do, you know, the more Western stuff that, which usually ends up me like cooking some sort of seafood dish.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We get some shade between McGonagall and Trelawney.
Yeah, they kind of love to. Well, I think McGonagall, moreover, Trelawney likes to really kind of throw shade at her.
Yeah, it's, well, I guess, you know, it's hard to, you know, actually one of our listeners, Chris, who is also a listener of Amanda and Kevin's podcast, he sent me a message a while back about discussing like sort of like hard magic systems versus soft magic systems. Do you know what that means?
No, I don't.
So it basically implies a hard magic system is when there are very specific rules and parameters and all of that is laid out by the author. And a softer magic system is something that it's more loose and it's like, it's magic, you know?
So, okay. So it's just kind of like this happened and here's, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So, you know, he was actually making the suggestion that Harry Potter is more of a softer magic system, which in certain elements, as we get later in the plot, I agree with. But honestly, I think for most cases of like everyday, you know, wizarding world, I feel like Harry Potter is the example of a very hard magic system where it's very quote unquote scientific. And I think, you know, a lot of people make the comparisons of potions to chemistry. And I think likewise, transfiguration, that what McGonagall teaches, is one of those really like, in the magical sense, a very highly scientific, precise branch of magic that, you know, things could blow up or go very badly if you do it wrong. And so for, you know, in a hard magic system, to have McGonagall teach this very complex subject with lots of protocol and things like that, and then just to have this quasi tarot card reader, it's like, what the hell?
Yeah, I guess. So I think if I'm understanding right, you're making the kind of argument, it's kind of both is what the answer is. I feel like class wise, you could go hard magic or soft magic on depending on the class, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, yeah, depending on the subject. But even so, yeah, that divination just seems to be in its own sort of lofty, softer category compared to things like transfiguration, charms, defense against the dark arts. I'm just trying to think, is there any other subject? Arithmancy, math, that's hardcore. Ancient runes, like that's language.
Muggle studies, kind of like, that's not, I feel like that's not really magic. That's just history.
That's, yeah, like history of magic, humanities, I'm not counting those. I'm thinking of actual magical courses. But yeah, like in a way, Trelawney's class is, again, the more softer option. Not using softer as supposedly like weak or sifty, but purely in the sense of soft magic versus hard magic and how much it's explained and how much of it is like detailed out and like explained and regulated.
Yeah. I feel like I want to think about that more, but that's a really good thing to think about. And I'm thinking of something like a comparison series. And granted, I'm kind of limited to you are much more well-versed in fantasy than I am. So cool. Interesting question and thing to think about.
Yep. And Dumbledore brings out the Christmas crackers.
He's pretty funny with these too. He's pretty, I think he's pretty funny because he like gets a, basically the hat that Neville's grandma wears or Snape does. I forgot how that happens, but he just puts it on. He's just like,
and these are supposed to be random, but I cannot help but think that Dumbledore is trolling him.
I think so too. I think Dumbledore is like, you know, thinks Snape's taking things a little too seriously and he just needs to chill. So I like that about Dumbledore.
I would love to get drunk with Dumbledore on Christmas Day.
I would love to just listen to him talk for hours. So yeah, so I think this kind of ends with them handing over the firebolt to McGonagall.
Yeah, so yeah, Hermione steals away, talks to McGonagall a little bit after the meal, and then, you know, several hours go by, and then they finally go back, and basically McGonagall, McGallion with the, like, gambling problem, yeah, is like, I'm taking the broom.
Yeah. Good for her. I feel like this is one of those, and I don't know how this relationship develops in the future, but I feel like McGonagall and Hermione are kind of cut from the same cloth, so there's a lot of trust in the other person. I mean, it's weird to say that she... I just feel like McGonagall and Hermione have a special relationship.
Kinship, yeah.
Yeah.
What did you go running to McGonagall for? Hermione threw her book aside. She was still pink in the face, but stood up and faced Ron defiantly. Because I thought, and Professor McGonagall agrees with me, that that broom was probably sent to Harry by Sirius Black.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. What do you think of this theory?
I think it's pretty sound. I mean, I don't know for sure, and I know the results of the tests later. You know, I think that we're still, like I said, I know there's complexity to Sirius Black, and I think it's even more evident now that we kind of know some background that he was a very important part of Harry's parents' life. So it could have been a gift, you know, just because there's more to that story than Harry knows right now. But I understand Hermione's hesitation, and I, like I said, I probably would have done the same thing, but probably I also kind of in the back of my mind feel like it's probably going to come out okay, but it's better safe than sorry.
Yeah, and so that leads us into chapter 12, The Patronus. And so I get really frustrated with Harry in this one because what starts out, Harry knew Hermione had meant well, but that didn't stop him from being angry with her. Like, Harry already has the very personal experience of Quirrell trying to jinx his broom in his very first Quidditch match.
I feel like I say this 100 times, but I feel like this is like kid logic or kid emotional intelligence here.
Yeah, of course. Kid logic, kid emotional intelligence. But even for a kid, like, he knows, he's had firsthand experience of what a jinx broom can do and how dangerous it is. And, you know, even if we take Sirius Black out of the equation, the fact that someone just gives you, you know, again, the Lamborghini with no note.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Like, it's like, this ain't Great Expectations.
Right. Yes. There's a little
that we're just going to give. Yeah. So, yeah. So, and also specifically with the broom, I get frustrated with Harry. And this is not the first instance we'll go throughout the series where Harry will emotionally side with Ron, even though logically he knows Hermione is right.
Yeah, I wonder why that is. And I don't know if, like, I can equate that to a friendship where I don't know if I can. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I can't even think of an equivalent. But I know that Oliver Wood is probably pretty irritated with Hermione as well. Like, he's... Yeah.
You know, and Harry explains the situation to them. And Wood brings up a good point. How the hell is Sirius Black, a convict on the run, going to be able to get his hands on a firebolt?
Yeah, he does make a good point. It's not like he's like rolling in the dough, which maybe he is. I don't think his parents like sent it to him from the future. But the only thing, I guess, he could have stolen it. But I'm sure that's charmed with a lot of protection. I don't know. I can't.
Yeah, because again, this is a top of the line broom. Like, that would have been very risky. The only way you can kind of counter argue Wood's point is that you have to accept the idea that Sirius Black has an accomplice.
Okay. Yeah. That would be the only way that could make sense.
Wood says, no, I'll go talk to McGonagall. I'll make her see reason, you know. And so classes begin again after Christmas. And the first divination lesson of the new term was much less fun. Professor Trelawney was now teaching them palmistry, and she lost no time in informing Harry that he had the shortest lifeline she had ever seen.
Of course she did. She's
I never got into palmistry for all my crystal ball runes and tarot things. Just palmistry is just not my thing.
I see a little bit of things and I look at my hand and I don't know. So I don't know if I've ever had my palm read now that I think about it. I don't think I have. I've had my tarot cards read many times, but
So
I don't know if she's that great at palmistry because I don't think this comes true. So anyway.
Yeah. And so, but he gets to Defense Against the Dark Arts and Lupin agrees to meet with him for his anti-dementor lessons in like the history of magic classroom.
Which is pretty cool. I think I like Lupin's willingness to help, and they get another Bogart and use that to practice because they know it's going to be a dementor is what he's going to conjure up to try to defeat.
And what we notice is, so Harry hears the voices with the Bogart Dementor.
Yeah.
So this kind of answers the sort of question I had, that in essence, a Bogart can take on the same attributes and power level as the thing it's impersonating.
Okay.
So which makes more sense why Lupin was so apprehensive that the Bogart was going to take the form of Lord Voldemort in his classroom.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That now I'm putting it all together. So that would be a bigger threat and super terrifying to everybody. So I was kind of wondering why he didn't think that would happen here.
Well, because they've already had the conversations of my fear is that the Dementor. Harry had tea with Lupin.
Yeah, I just was, part of me thought that the Dementors were something that would be like, I could say like, you know, I really am scared of this. But then the actual like fear would come through, whatever that might be, something subconscious. But
is not the way. Well, there are no surprise subconscious fears here.
Yeah. Dang. All right.
Yep. And so ultimately the Patronus charm is a sort of guardian that is made out of happy memories.
Right, which you gotta really have a good one, apparently, or one that's really, you know, true, because Harry goes through a lot of these. I also thought that was a pretty, I don't know if on the nose is the right thing to say, but the way to combat fear is to think of something pleasurable. It makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. Logically. I'm just thinking about the more metaphysical notion of time, because time is a big theme of this book. Why does it have to be a memory? Why can't it just be a happy thought, like the present or the future or a hypothetical that just the thought of that makes you happy? I guess it's implied that something you have had to live and experienced, and only through experience can you feel that level of joy you need to conjure the charm, maybe.
That's an interesting question. Yeah, because it could be some like a fantasy or something. Maybe that would be that sometimes that could bring people joy. But it's definitely has to be a memory. Because what if you're just full of sadness? Who knows? I guess Harry is kind of full of sadness, but he's had these moments of happiness. So I don't.
Yep. So they try once, and of course Harry collapses.
Right. And they keep having to go for like a stronger, happier memory. But
yeah, and then Lupin's amping up the chocolate.
Right. Yeah, he's like
I'm thinking like if I had a Patronus class, like I would start, you know, after one try, give me a Hershey bar, and then the next try, give me a Lindt like truffle, and then the next one, give me like the nice Belgian truffles.
Just keep amping up the like level of fancy chocolate. I like that. That's a good idea.
That's how I want my Patronus lesson to go.
I think that would work for me as well, but I think I need to substitute with some Reese's peanut butter cups. Just throw them in there, just a little bit.
This is true. Did I tell you this? So I love Reese's peanut butter cups, and so much so that one of my peers in my undergrad at Syracuse, he was just like, Amy, I always know when you're away in the Middle East because the America's supply of Reese's peanut butter cups magically replenishes itself.
That's funny. You must really like, that must really be your jam. That's funny.
It is my jam. Like chocolate and peanut butter. Like that's like inventing fire or bread.
Yeah. My mother-in-law makes a really delicious peanut butter pie with chocolate crust. So
that's my favorite cookie to make. The peanut butter cookie with the Hershey Kiss on top.
Oh, yum. Those are great. Okay. Now I'm hungry.
Yeah. But anyway, so now, you know, Harry's not doing all that well. And now in addition to hearing his mother, he has now heard his father.
Yeah, which this also brings up the fact that, I mean, I guess we kind of knew this, but Lupin knew his parents as well.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, and so Harry makes a logical conjecture, then you must have known Sirius Black, right? And Lupin gets really defensive.
Yeah, he's kind of not, I don't really know how I would describe his reaction, but yeah, the defensive is the best way to describe his reaction. So we don't, there's obviously more to the story there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Harry finally goes to sleep, realizing they're dead. He told himself sternly, they're dead, and listening to echoes of them won't bring them back.
That's very sad, but very true.
Yeah. Makes me think of your favorite Dumbledore quote Amir of Arras said.
Yes. Does not do to. Dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we get a little Ravenclaw played Slytherin a week after them. Slytherin won, though narrowly. So yeah, the Quidditch commentary. And what do we got? Oh, we've got, well, Ron's starting to try and getting more suspicious about Hermione's classes.
Justifiably so. He's asking, well, which we know what's going on, but he's 2 seconds later, he's around, oh, that was yeah. Wood, but.
And there's one thing I noticed that, you know, in his explaining of this, you know, Ernie McMillan told me she's never missed a Muggle Studies class, but half of them are at the same time as divination, and she's never missed one of those either. I just found it interesting. So we already know from Ernie McMillan from last book that he is a pureblood.
Okay.
So it's good to see that a pureblood like Ernie is taking Muggle studies to legitimately understand the Muggle world. And you know what that got me thinking of?
What?
The whole controversy of the critical race theory.
I have seen things about that, but I have not read a single thing about it. I've been a little overwhelmed with some nonsense.
Yeah. So basically it's, you know, it's the push to teach high schools or in public education a more realistic look of, you know, how slavery and racism was baked into how our country was founded and how it's developed and, you know, how the implications of that still affect people, yada, yada, yada. Seems totally normal, right? Because, right. You know, because this is so accepted, you know, in college, right?
Right. It's just history.
Yeah, like it's just history. You know, there's one video clip of, I think it's in Georgia, of this school board meeting of people going crazy. And basically, you know, again, these crazy white people saying that it's like divisive and that you're going to, you know, I don't want my children to be told that they're bad because they're white. And I'm just like, who said that?
That's nobody said that. I think that... Okay. Well, now I know, and now I realize.
And honestly, and I think if, you know, I think if in the Hogwarts, in the Wizarding world, if Hogwarts try to push, we should make Muggle studies mandatory, like there would be the same brouhaha from people like Lucius Malfoy and others.
That's an excellent point, because they're kind of, a lot of people are dismissive of that. And even Ron was kind of like, you know, why do you want to take that class? That sounds...
Well, because Hermione's Muggle born, so she knows it, like...
Right.
Like, right. You know, his was more like practical, but yeah, it's just, oh my God, I just could not get over the fact that, well, you cannot say that they're saying that, you know, white people equals bad, because it's not an individual choice. It's a whole systemic issue. So it's not your fault. So why would you, so why do you make the claim people are going to say that it's all your fault?
I think people really need to get over, I mean, I have done my ancestry a little bit. There are things in my family's past that aren't flattering. And, you know, it's not like I look back at that and say, wow, that was great. Let's do it again. It's just part of history. And, you know, I think that it's not an admirable thing. But if you don't know people's involvement, you can, you know, it's that old cliched phrase, you know, if you don't know the history, you're doomed to repeat it or whatever. So let's just be knowledgeable and understand very clearly and what we did to other people so we don't do it again. And I guess that's just some people's desire to have continued, you know, feel like just turn a blind eye to bad things.
Yeah, like, I don't know. It's, if Germany can get over World War II and their Nazism, why can't we do that here?
I don't know. I don't even have a great speculation for that.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that got me thinking about, you know, Muggle studies. And I'm glad at least one pureblood is taking the time to take Muggle studies.
Good. Maybe he'll set the trend.
Yeah. And so Wood comes back to Harry and says, McGonagall's not giving the firebolt back. And he says, she got a bit shirty with me, told me I got my priorities wrong, seemed to think I cared more about winning the cup than I do about you staying alive, just because I told her I didn't care if I threw you off as long as you caught the snitch first.
I think there's a little part of McGonagall that feels the same way.
Yeah, a part of her, but yeah.
Tiny.
You know, and you know, honestly, it would be suspicious and they should have investigated it either way, but without the whole Sirius Black situation, they probably just would have let him have it, the broom.
Yeah, probably. Probably. And I guess there would probably not be any sort of like speculation. It'd just be like, oh, somebody, I think at this point, Harry's just used to like this, these weird things popping up to his benefit. So he'd probably be like, oh, sweet, firebolt, move on, yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. So, and then we get, January faded into February. Match against Ravenclaw was drawing nearer and nearer. McGonagall still won't get him the firebolt back, and he continues with his lessons, and he's getting frustrated, and Lupin's like, you're expecting too much of yourself. For a 13-year-old wizard, even an indistinct Patronus is a huge achievement. You aren't passing out anymore, are you?
Yeah.
So we've come to the, you know, we talked about Patronus lessons. So what, you took the test. What is your Patronus?
I feel like my Patronus is not that cool. It's a beagle. I don't know
That's so cute.
that's fine. I'm a Hufflepuff with a beagle Patronus. I obviously am not going to be doing a lot of, dueling out with anybody. But what is your Patronus?
It is the Raven.
Dang, that is beautiful for you. I was going to say maybe it was a dragon, but I don't know if that's an option. But
there, it is an option, but it is extremely rare.
Well, a raven is pretty cool.
Yeah, so yeah, raven pups, and then connection to my favorite poem, The Raven, by Edgar Allan Poe.
I got to see if there's a beagle poem, I guess. Beagles are cute, but we're not. Right. I don't think there's anything intimidating about a beagle.
No. And then so they have a little break, and Lupin brings out some butterbeer, and Harry has no subtlety.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, like basically he's like, oh, I love butterbeer. And Lupin's like, right.
Yeah, like how did you, and then he's like, Ron and Hermione brought it back for me. It was great. And obviously he's like, yeah, whatever. But here we get into the Dementor's kiss.
Yeah. So Harry asked the question, what's under a Dementor's hood? Well, the only people who really know are in no condition to tell us. You see, the Dementor lowers its hood only to use its last and worst weapon. They call it the Dementor's kiss. It's what Dementors do to those they wish to destroy utterly. I suppose there must be some kind of mouth under there, because they clamp their jaw upon the mouth of the victim and suck out his soul.
Wow. That's a little dark.
I remember you, I like read this passage or part of it to you when we were doing our Gothic elements in Harry Potter on Sublimely Gothic.
Okay. Okay.
And you were, and you like screamed into the microphone and you're like, that is dark.
It is. I guess I still had the same reaction. That is dark. It's still dark. That's a,
and it can't even be referred to as killing. Much worse than that. You can exist without your soul, you know, as long as your brain and heart are still working, but you'll have no sense of self anymore. No memory, no anything. There's no chance at all of recovery. You will just exist as an empty shell, and your soul is gone forever. Lost.
So it's like a, I guess, lobotomizing a person almost, where they're just existing.
Yeah, it's like both lobotomizing someone and just the idea of what are the magical afterlife implications of that if you're still alive without your soul or whatever.
That gets into that bigger question of what is a soul, and it makes me think of a book I read, The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, which is kind of one of the questions in that
book. Is super popular and people love it. Isn't any good?
It is. I did enjoy it.
I already asked you, and you said it was slow in the beginning, but good.
I just had some upends in my life when I started it. And then it got to a point where I couldn't stop reading it. So that's always a good sign for me with a book. But yeah, it's enjoyable. It's a lot of soul questions, things like that. The Dementors are not coming to play. That's kind of why.
Lupin says, you know, the Ministry of Magic has given the Dementors permission to use this if they capture Sirius Black.
So that is that. So obviously they said, you know, few people know, can report back. And so this is like, they're Sirius Black. I think we just keep being reminded of the level of seriousness that the Wizarding World is taking this, and the level of threat that this.
You did the serious joke.
Oh, I did. Oh, I didn't even notice.
Everyone does it at least once.
Okay. We got mine out of the way.
Okay. He deserved it, said Harry suddenly. You think so? Said Lupin lightly. Do you really think anyone deserves that? Yes, said Harry defiantly, for some things. So, capital punishment metaphor.
Well, I don't know. I do not see... I think the instances where it may be justified are rare, and therefore I don't believe it's a good thing because so many flaws have happened. I mean, this is essentially – so if we're making the kind of association with the Dementor's Kiss, it would be wrongly applying the Dementor's Kiss to somebody who didn't do the wrong thing. And that's – I appreciate that kind of question coming up with Lupin, who's kind of like, really? You think it's here? And again, Harry's life experience, and I'm sure his personal connection to the situation, he's like, hell yeah, absolutely.
I'm in the same thing. Like, there's no point having capital punishment when the justice system is already so broken, and, you know, the studies of at least 1 in every 10 people are, you know, wrongfully, you know, convicted of something that gets them on death row.
Yeah, that risk is just too high.
Yeah, the risk is too high. And I remember, I forget who or when it happened, but I remember my dad telling me that there was one state governor or some state official who just took everyone on death row to life in prison in his state because he's just like, I couldn't sleep at night.
That's the kind of people that we need. I mean, I'm not into that, but I'm into like vigilante justice. I don't know about that. I mean, I don't know what I would do in this situation, and I hope to never be in this situation, but that governor, in my opinion, did the right thing.
Of course. So his little lesson ends, and he bumps into McGonagall, who at last gives him his firebolt back.
Thank goodness. And everything was fine. They didn't find anything weird.
It had no jinxes, no curses, no anything. Just a really nice person wanted to give Harry his broom.
I mean, it's still a little suspect, but, you know, whatever. At least there's, as far as we can tell, no secret nonsense going on.
Mm-hmm. And so because now that they have the Firebolt bag, you know, Harry's like, you know, let's go make up with Hermione because, like, ultimately no harm was done.
Right. It's kind of interesting, but what – so they go to make peace and then it goes a little sideways.
Yeah. Well, first, Harry, again, is noticing how stressed Hermione is and how hard she's working, and – he looks around at her essay for Muggle Studies, explain why Muggles need electricity.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that was just funny because the day that I read this and, you know, reviewing it and when we were supposed to record like a week or so ago, my power went out over that weekend. And it's just like, oh, I know why Muggles need electricity because I was out of power for 12 hours.
Oh, no, that's awful.
It was a really big storm. It was all over Indiana and Ohio. But yeah, like it was just a good 12 hours. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to be reading the old fashioned way today.
Nothing wrong with that. Sometimes it's peaceful to have that happen if your day can allow for it. But sometimes it's very disruptive. I know.
Yeah, the only saving grace was we had my dinner party with my friends beforehand. So we had tons of food.
Oh, that's nice. Okay,
good. So we could just, you know, pillage on leftovers and you know, we could survive. But yeah.
Earlier today, there were storms here and the lights flickered and I was like about to start up a meeting that I had to do. And I was like, oh my God, please don't make this interrupt my day. So, but we're good. It was fine.
So yeah, Ron goes up. I think he was carrying the Firebolt into the dormitory and he screams.
Because poor Scabbers, right?
Yes, Scabbers is gone. And there's a blood-soaked sheet with a lot of ginger cat hairs.
And that is how the chapter ends.
Indeed.
I really wanted to see what happened, but I did not read. So I'm proud of myself.
Good. So... yeah, just a lot. Again, classic Hogwarts Christmas. Shall we move on to Gothic Geek Out?
Let's do it. Yeah.
So my Gothic Geek Out is the whole mysterious gift portion because, again, I think I mentioned it reminded me a great deal of Great Expectations, the mysterious benefactor.
Okay, that does have definitely a Gothic theme to it.
Yeah, not as prominent in all Gothic literature, but again, Dickens uses it a lot, and he's considered Gothic. Again, he's the more like urban 19th century, you know, super grimy, disgusting London Gothic, you know, with the workhouses and everything. But yeah, like that just got me thinking because, you know, what's his name? Pip with Great Expectations.
I think so.
Yeah, because the whole thing is that he's basically raised up and is basically becomes a gentleman overnight with the conditions being that you cannot, like, you know, and he does and everything is handled through this lawyer and the lawyer, you know, doesn't tell him anything about who the guy that's helping him out.
Okay. I've never read Good Expectations. I think I saw like a retelling of it and it was just I couldn't hang with it. It was too bizarre.
Yeah, like I haven't read it again. You know my feelings on Charles Dickens.
Yes.
But again, Christmas Carol is the only thing short enough I can, you know, muster. But I have watched the more modern or more recent adaptation with Holiday Grainger as playing Estella and Helen Bonham Carter is Mrs. Hamish.
Okay. I think it's Ethan Hawke. Is that in Gwyneth Paltrow? Or maybe I'm not thinking that, or thinking of a different one. I don't remember.
Not Gwyneth Paltrow, no.
Okay.
No, this is, yeah, a different one.
That's, okay. Interesting. It's never been something that I've been like, I need to check that out. But the gothicness of the secret benefactor. For some reason the 13th tale came to mind, but I don't know why.
Well, that makes me think of, again, because literally the head, the quote-unquote patriarch, the crazy guy, he dies, and they literally don't say anything because they don't want to disrupt anything, so they just continue to get the money and supplies through the lawyer and just pretend that he ran away.
Yeah, Okay. That's why that must have come to mind.
Those... Yeah, because I don't know if it's modern. I don't know if it's what it's like now, but I know in, like, you know, 20th century, like Canada, or like early 19th, 20th century Canada, or like England, you know, there's the rule that if someone goes missing, you have to wait 7 years before they're officially declared dead in absentia.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. That's pretty...
I only know that because, again, there are several, like, murder mysteries I've read and or watched that, like, follow this, you know. They're trying to, like, fish out a murderer to, like, show them the body because the murderer's not going to wait, you know, seven right. years to get the inheritance or whatever.
Wow. Okay. Jeez. that's interesting. That's dark. It's all dark. But,
yeah. Gothic stuff. What'd you think?
I'm going to be boring, and I'm going to go with a Dementor's Kiss. I think that the idea of something just totally sucking your soul out, I think we could apply that. I'm thinking to, like, Wuthering Heights, where relationship is kind of just totally sucking the life out of some people, with Catherine and Heathcliff. So that's a little bit more, you know, metaphorical than it is an actual thing. The level of depravity and darkness that the Dementors are capable of is the equivalent of some gothic monsters. I guess metaphorically could also apply to, like, Frankenstein, how the creature basically becomes something that is just, you know, Dr. Frankenstein's sucks his existence out as well. So that was going to be my gothic geek outness.
That's a good one, because, yeah, like, with the Dementor's Kiss, I guess it's kind of makes me think of gothic-wise the sort of, you know, this typical trope in gothic and horror of, like, a person gets so scared, you know, of whatever ghost or monster or whatever that they lose their mind and they end up in the asylum, and then the protagonist goes to the asylum to try and figure out what did you see.
Right. Oh, that's a good point, too. That's a good connection.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty then. And now we can move on to Tarot of the Day.
Sweet.
And the card I pulled out is the Nine of Swords, which is not a very happy card.
No. Okay. I don't know very much about them, but...
Again, swords typically deal with intellect, more often, again, associated with water or air. So, yeah, it's usually nine swords. Again, it's usually a woman, like, you know, cradling her head in her hands, like, kind of weeping. That's the typical traditional imagery with the card. So the Nine of Swords suggests that dark thoughts and disturbing feelings are weighing you down and keeping you up at night. You are worrying excessively about a situation, and your negative thoughts are getting the better of you, leaving you stressed and anxious. The more you associate with your fear, the more they will rule your life. As you obsess over what's not working, the more anxious you become and the more you will worry. It becomes a negative cycle where one awful thought leads to another and another and another until they overwhelm you. Just as the Nine of Swords are stacked up upon each other on the wall, so too are your negative thoughts.
Well, what does that sound like? I think it sounds like a Dementor.
Yeah, well, I think it's an element of, you know, the Dementor's power. I thought more of in the beginning of chapter 11 when Harry is in the shock and trying to process and overanalyzing the whole Sirius Black Godfather reveal.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That's a good association as well.
And let's see. Be careful, because fear and worry in the Nine of Swords can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. As you obsess over what may go wrong, you are more and more likely to manifest your worst-case scenario. And I guess this is also true in Harry stressing himself out when his firebolt gets taken away. Because both he and Ron catastrophize it in being like that. McGonagall and the teachers have just decided, no, you can't have this. You will never have it back. And we're going to, like, destroy it. Like, all she said was, we just need to run some tests. That's literally all she said.
Right. I can relate to Ron and Harry because I'm very good at catastrophizing. So I see you guys, and I
yeah, you know, it's, I don't know. With the exception of some things that have been going on at work, like when it came to, like, studying, like, at college, like, I never catastrophized like work or like school or like deadlines or things like that. Because I always try to tell myself, you know, am I going to worry about this on my deathbed? No. But I catastrophize, you know, nuances in relationships because personal relationships are important to me.
That's smart. I'm very good at catastrophizing pretty much everything. So I don't say it's not one of my more admirable qualities, but I definitely worry a lot. So working on it, going to therapy. That's what we do.
All right, then. Yeah, that's all I can think of for Nine of Swords. You?
That's it. I mean, like my initial knee jerk was the Dementors. And I think that it might be, again, the more obvious analysis of that. But I think I feel confident in my decision there. I'm all about the Dementors today.
Yeah. Alrighty then, and now we go on to Rune of the Day, and it's ironically, this one, it's the symbol kind of looks more like a P, but it actually corresponds to the letter W, like the W sound.
Oh, okay.
And so it's pronounced Wunyu.
Okay.
Do I hear your cat in the background?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to try to open the door, so maybe she'll be quiet, but I'm sorry. One sec.
Nah, it's fine.
Need to calm down, lady. All right. I'm not going to say she won't cry, but she's
yeah. in here. No, I'm on the dining room table and I'm looking across at the living room and little Bacon is in the corner and his paws are twitching in as he's dreaming.
Aw, I love when they do that. So cute.
Yeah. So it's interesting that I pulled this rune in comparison to Nine of Swords because the big keywords of this rune is joy, happiness, harmony, bliss.
So the opposite of what we just talked about.
The opposite of everything we just talked about. So a very positive rune, Wunyu, literally translates to joy and indicates all manner of happiness and well-being. Situations that have been difficult are resolved and optimism is renewed. It may be the surprise development comes into your life that changes everything for the better. You may experience a feeling of being truly blessed by the higher realms. However, bliss and harmony are also present and more consistently so when we take a balanced approach to life.
So this makes me think of, again, with the Patronus, to defeat the Dementors, to think of something happy and positive and, you know, mm-hmm. joyful, just
yeah.
to counter.
Overwhelmingly so. Yeah, you're smart to go immediately for the Patronus because I actually went more towards, you know, just the elation of when he opens the firebolt.
Oh, yeah.
That's definitely, you know, sort of happy elation. And then in terms of harmony and the sort of reconciliation spirit of the rune, I think of, again, at least attempting, you know, trying to make up with Hermione before it gets kiboshed very quickly.
Right. Yeah. There was the moment of, let's be fine. Oh, God, what happened to Scabbers? So, yes, it's.
Yeah. And then again, then the joy of getting the firebolt back.
Yes. Yeah. And making. And making everybody, not just Harry, but Harry, Ron, because I think Ron wants to give it like a ride, and Oliver Wood and everybody very happy about the future of their Quidditch team. So,
indeed. And that's our tarot and runes of the day. And now it is time for fan fiction.
Fiction. So my initial one, and I think we kind of touched on it, but I think we'll just expand on it, was what if they just kind of were like, with the firebolt, just, okay, cool. Happy Christmas. Go about your business. Obviously there weren't repercussions for that. You know, it was fine, but I guess let's say they just let it happen. And, you know, what if Hermione wasn't there to kind of calm everybody down and say, like, maybe we need to take a step back and look at this. Like, what if logical Hermione wasn't there? Harry would have, you know, gone on the broom and things would have been fine. But what if they weren't fine? What if something happened?
Well, again, now since we know that there's no curses, like, I'm not going to go down the hypothetical of what if it was actually cursed. I'm like, so I think if they had not confiscated it, I think at the very least Hermione would have like been at every one of those like Quidditch matches.
Yes.
Like yeah. every time that Harry was on the broom. And I think she probably, you know, might, you know, without the teachers interfering, I think Hermione might have done her own personal research of like, you know, maybe even write quality Quidditch supplies and like, did you like order, like what were the circumstances of your most like recent Firebolt purchase?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like,
she would
like, I think she would take it upon herself to play detective.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're totally right. She would have, that would have been a really interesting take actually, to just have Hermione do all the research. And I think you could have made a really good little mini mystery within that, you know.
Yeah, mini subplot. Yep. Yeah, come Dr. Watson. Hermione is played by Emma Watson.
Yeah. Beautiful. I love it. I think that would have been fun.
Okay, I'm trying to think. Because, yeah, that was one I naturally thought of, because that's the biggest sort of, you know, climactic piece. What else goes on? What if Harry had been really mean and had confronted Hagrid in the midst of all of the Buckbeak stuff and throwing the Sirius Black stuff on top of it?
I just can't imagine Hagrid being treated that way. I mean, I know we see people treat it. I can't imagine the trio treating him that way just because he's so beloved and he was kind of there for one of these really big happy moments. I would think Harry was an asshole. I mean, that would be automatic, like,
what like, the I hell? Wonder, well, a part of me thinks that maybe Hagrid, like, it would be terrible and I would hate Harry for it. But if Harry were to, like, kick a man while he's down, I wonder if in his grief and in his, like, remorse and guilt that maybe Harry could have, you know, extorted some information from Hagrid more so. Because, again, as you keep saying, things are complex with Sirius Black. And I wonder if Harry had caught Hagrid while he was weak, that he would have divulged something that maybe the adults had decided maybe he shouldn't say.
That's a good point. Maybe he would have, it would have been a little, if Harry were a little more leaned into that little Slytherin side, maybe he would have done that.
Yeah, because I feel like Hagrid would be the type that, again, that would feel really guilty and then out of guilt trying to pacify Harry at this point.
Yeah.
Because yeah. He doesn't have the same sort of parental like instinct like Molly or even McGonagall to be like, it was for your own good. Like Hagrid would be like, you know, I'll do it. You know, I'll do whatever to get back in your good graces.
Right. Yeah. Good points.
Alrighty then. And that is our episode. Tune in next time and we will be going over chapters 13 and 14. Gryffindor versus Ravenclaw and Snape's grudge. Ooh. So you'll love that. An entire chapter that's, you know, titled after Quidditch.
Oh, yeah. I'm psyched. It'll be fine.
No, but yeah, it's okay. But Snape's grudge is really good and very interesting.
Something always happens during a Quidditch chapter. And I am very curious about Snape's grudge, for sure.
Because he has, how many grudges do you think this man has?
I think the list is endless. Yes.
Alrighty then. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.